Accession number 30644, Mr. Richard Sikorski, Reel 7. Now, what about any other training? So this is flying training, but what about air fighting training? Because you haven't done any of that.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm still flying U-2, which has no armament.
Well, no, I mean, when you got to six, yeah, there's still no armament
on that. Then the next plane I was transferred when I passed all the necessaries on UT-1. Next plane I was...
Was this still with 16 training wing? It's a MOSC.
16 training wing.
So what was the third aircraft?
Third aircraft was Yak-7.
Yak is?
J-A-K.
Now what's a Yak-7?
Yak-7 is the fighter plane, two-seater.
Now, can you describe this plane? Because what do you remember of it? What was its nature? Give us a sort of little pen portrait of it.
The basic fighter plane, basic Yak fighter. Single wing. Two-seater engine. I don't know exactly which one was in Yak-7. Yak-9 was VK-105PF. 12-cylinder, V12-cylinder, 52 liters capacity, 1,260 horsepower. With twin compressor when you to get height. You switched it. It was on one. Then you switch it at about 4,000 meter. You went to the second speed to get more pressure on the carburetors to get height. Armament. Again. Don't remember of 7 or 9 which I was flying.
Now, what was it like to fly the Yak-7?
It was okay. I was on Yak-7. I was had about 8 flights and then went to Yak-9.
Now, what were
single
you...
seater. That's a trainer. Yak-7 is a trainer.
So Yak-7, so it's a fighter trainer.
Fighter trainer, yes.
And what about the? So that's that. Anything about your time flying the Yak-7? Anything in, that?
Nothing happened during that time. Absolutely, I went through it relatively fast. I loved Yak. It was a good fighter. Let's put it this way: it was equal to Yak-9 was. Equal or better, I would say better, than Messerschmitt 109.
Now tell me a bit about the Yak-9 then. I know you've just done the Yak-10, but...
Yak-9.
What about the Yak-9? What was so good about it?
Armament. One, depend on which model. On the model which I was flying, I had one UBT... That's 12mm machine gun on the left block, firing through the wind, through the prop, and one cannon firing through the center of the prop, which was lying inside the cylinders. There was transmission change too, and. You fire straight through the prop, through the center of the.
I know what you mean. What about the wings? Nothing on the wings?
On the wings, depending on mission, up to 8 rockets. Up to 8 rockets, 80 millimeter rockets, and that was quite something.
Now, what was it like to fly the Yak-9?
It was a bliss to me. It was extremely responsive. easy to fly, easy to land, quite fast. After the war, I pushed one, I got a new one, and pushed it to 860 kilometers. And it started vibrating so badly that it took me 2 kilometers to get to the horizontal flight. It was a very pleasant. The best plane I've flown, most certainly of Russian planes.
Now, how did they start training you on the Yak-9 then? What did you have to learn?
What we have to learn? Number one, we had to learn how to shoot.
Now, how did they do that?
How did they do that? You had a plane who was towing the...
Oh, the targets, yeah.
Target, towing the target. It's like a large sleeve.
I've forgotten the name myself, so don't worry about that. And so
on a line about 400 meters long, so you didn't do any stupidities with the...
A drogue.
Drone.
Drogue.
Drogue. Yeah.
Now, how did
attack
you do at that? I mean,
in the first place, we had opposite to English approach to amount. For example, Spitfire had 6, 8, depends which one, of 303 machine guns. We went for a high caliber, as you can see, a lot more powerful armament, but there is nothing in life, there is nothing for free. High armament, I had 270 odd rounds for 0.5, and depending on the caliber, if you had 37 millimeter cannon, you had 28 rounds. If you had 20 millimeter cannon, there were 3, 20, 27, 37. I don't remember how many rounds you have. You have every third, fourth round
tracer,
different color. So you knew by color of tracer what state of ammunition you are.
But it was whatever it was restricted. You didn't
it
have
It was
much.
Very, very restricted. Let's put it this way. Not only, Yak was weighing 3 tons. So by fighter of that sort, it's mid to light. If you used 37 millimeter cannon, you had to put full acceleration, full gas, because the plane stopped. It was 147 kilograms of gun going vroom, vroom, vroom. 0.5 was 800 rounds per minute. 37 millimeter, I think, was 400 rounds a minute. And you had 27 or 28 rounds. So, and you never shoot more than 3.
So how quickly did you get the hand? I mean, you were a good shot on the ground. How quickly did
on
you
the ground? On
how
it
quickly
took
did
me
you get the hang of aerial shooting?
First, you have to visualize. It's like clay shooting, that your target moves, and your bullet moves, and the speed of target is only, let's say, 1/3 speed of your bullet. So, where to shoot? Not at the target, but where to shoot to hit him. That probably was visualization, and put it on collimator sight. Put the plane in the right place, in the right direction, where to shoot. That I found the most difficult part of the exercise.
Now, hadn't you got used to that with, you know, clay pigeon shooting at home?
That's slightly different. That is completely different. So that took me about 2 weeks.
I think we call it deflection shooting. You allow for the
And how? For example, you've got a cross and two rings after it. If you're approaching a fighter from the rear at 15 degrees, you can put, if you have to put his nose on the second ring, so there are two rings forward motion. So plane is there and you shoot there. Completely in front of it, quite far. Assuming that fighter flies at normal speeds.
So at first you didn't hit the air. Could you hit the air drogues? I mean,
yes. After the third time, I succeeded.
Did you ever do any air to ground firing?
Yes.
Tell me about
with
that.
With cannon, air to ground fire from dive. Not very steep. About 30, between 30 and 45 degrees dive. And that's relatively easy because your target doesn't move.
Now, did you learn what they call the fighter approach, various pursuits, the method of getting on an aircraft's tail, all the thing of dogfighting or
all the thing of dogfighting. For example, one thing I discovered for myself, and I've done it once in actual life. You've got a plane behind you. I put the flaps on and reduce the speed. And plane jumps and reduces the speed. Then you reduce the flaps that you are behind him.
That's the wing flaps?
Wing flaps, yes. For landing.
Did you
can't do it on maximum speeds, of course, but at about 300, 400. Would you believe that I don't remember the... An average speed, traveling speed in Yak was about 3,350 kilometers, I'm talking.
Now, what about the tactics of approach, the classic fighter approach?
From the standard, if you possibly can, be as high as possible, be in the sun if you can, and jump and get behind him. And then Yak was nice because if you pulled it very hard in a turn, it tells you, don't pull anymore, started jitter.
Shuddering. Jitter, yeah. I know what you mean.
Started jitter, and then let me go, because I will go into spin.
Any other aerial tactics? Did they try and teach you to improve your aerial air vision? Because people say that air vision is something that's difficult to get, you know, so that you can see enemy aircraft. I mean, they talk a lot about it.
Once upon a time, I had a good vision. 20/20, and I could see in the fog. I don't know why, but I proved it many times that I could see a lot better in the fog than many other people. By now, I am blind.
But then you had good eyesight.
Not only good eyesight, my reaction time was 80 milliseconds. From the signal to the fulfillment from the command to fulfillment.
Now, how did you test reaction time? Was that something you were trained in?
It was tested by quite a number of devices. By the way,
what kind of thing?
For example, you've got target is coming up. You have to visualize, adjust, and shoot. and time is measured. I can tell you, I've done measurements in 56, and that was 280 milliseconds, my reaction time.
And this
dropped age.
This is obviously something good for a fighter pilot.
Oh yes, it was good. My reaction time was good. I wish it was half, at least, not more than twice what it was. Today is, I would say, about six times worse than it was driving.
Now
I can feel it in driving, especially eye accommodation. That's my problem. From the time I see to the time I see exactly.
Now, anything else you have been? What about formation flying and formation tactics? Formations first.
Formation flying. We normally went to action in.
I mean, for the training. I mean, did you train?
What's the name of the? You've got squadron. What's below squadron?
An echelon.
No. In Polish, it's ki. It means you've got 10 planes in the squadron, which divides into two, which I don't number. Commander, squadron commander, his second in command.
Flight commander.
Flight. Four plane flight. Flight. Right. So we normally work in flights when you've got a first plane and the covering plane. Two pairs, always in pairs.
And did you practice? I mean, were you
yes.
taught to practice to fly in formation? How do you practice it?
We were practicing flying. Remember, at that time, flying, it wasn't red arrows. You don't touch the wings. Wall was about 10 meters wing to wing, 10 meters and 5 degrees difference. Meters between
did
wings.
Did you take to that? I mean, did it take long? Some people find it very difficult at first.
No. If you fill the plane, if you are one with plane, you could fly at that time, from what I remember, by seat of the pants, I could feel the bloody thing. I knew. If I thought about something, the plane was doing it. That was the beauty.
Now, did you practice tactics in flights? You know, this business of being in pairs, how to fly. Did you practice that?
Not a lot. We practiced a little bit attack formation.
Now, what was the attack formation then?
Pair. In pairs. Always in pairs. I was lucky I was first in pair, so I attack and the poor guy should be within a reasonable distance and cover my ass and look. The most important thing is to have your eyes to see what's going on around you, if there is anything else. Visualization of, it means your sight is blown into in front of you. You can see it everywhere, your sight, collimator sight. But what's going behind you, that's the important sign.
So even if you were doing something like attacking or in formation, you had to know what was behind you?
Within reason. The minute you decide that you want to use your armament, then you forget everything else. You concentrate 100% on what you're doing for as short period of time as humanly possible.
Now, any other tactics or things you are learning in the Yak 9 with the 16th training wing?
16th, yes. Well, basically. Our approach was philosophy. If you want a kill, you have the shooting distance 30 meters. Go as near as humanly possible. Then to reduce the shooting errors.
And that
again, because of the lack of ammunition, amount of ammunition we had.
So was there a range at which you wouldn't open fire? What was the furthest away you'd open fire?
100 meters.
And the closest would be?
Touching him, preferably. Not quite.
But
not
as close
quite.
As possible?
As close as possible. As close as possible.
And you practice that?
You practice approach to 30 meters. Then if you miss, the 100% your fault.
Anything else you had to learn?
Survive.
And what do you mean by that?
Don't do anything drastically stupid.
Now, what do you mean, though? I mean, because, you know, a lot of this stuff's dangerous. What does it mean? Do you have to just have common sense, or what do you mean?
Fly with the common sense, with capabilities of the plane, knowing the capabilities of the plane, and don't go over because then you will. The worst thing which can happen to you is to go into the spin. So always try at high speed. You can have high speed spin, for example, in turn when you overpull it.
So you had to make sure that whatever you did, you didn't tear the wings off.
You
or
didn't.
Whatever, you know, you didn't go over the top.
Probably I would first faint before, or go into blackout before I pulled the wings.
Did you have what would you wear in the aircraft? Did you have oxygen? What would you wear?
You had oxygen. You had oxygen, which we used over 4,000 meters. Normal flying suit. What was
now? What was the normal flying? Sorry, because they don't know. What would you wear?
American leather jacket. Because
what they call the bomber jacket.
Bomber jacket, yeah. American leather jacket. Fair boots. That I would say was keeping your feet warm was the most important. Remember, the temperature drops 5 degrees per 1,000
meters.
You
didn't have a warmed Sidcut suit or anything like that. Was the cockpit warmed at all?
No.
So it was cold.
We are talking about Russia. Pilot is of no importance.
So you just wore your flying a bomber jacket. What about your uniform? Just your normal uniform?
No, normally you had a, don't remember the name, the flying suit.
Like a Sidcut? Well, the English one was called.
Yeah, something of that sort.
An all-in-one?
All-in-one, and the fur jacket. And the fur boots. That was.
Now you had oxygen.
You had oxygen, which we used over. If we go for long times over 4,000 meters, yes, we switch to oxygen. We had a radio.
Now tell me about what was the wireless system that you used? I mean, radio? Sorry.
Whatever. Don't ask me the names. I don't remember.
Who were you linked to? Other aircraft or just to the control?
The amount of usage, the radio quality of radio was very, very low. It means what you had is a lot of crackle and sometimes interrupted by speech on a very, very, very useless level, especially when you've got engine, you've got 12 sparking plugs and so on. Quality of radio communication. I could communicate with the squadron leader, could communicate with the with the plane in my pair.
What range would it have? Roughly. I mean, it does depend on the conditions, doesn't it?
Not really. We are communicating within the same sphere of sky.
So you couldn't when you were out on a mission.
Well, I can tell you what I use my radio very often on the ground to listen to BBC London, Polish section.
Now
that was the only news of the work which I could get, being on Yak, because all the other planes before didn't have radios.
Now, anything else about your training with 16 wing?
Well,
we've covered a fair bit, but it's just, you know, how were you assessed then? Who assessed you?
You were assessed training squadron commander. Don't remember his name. He was a Russian. Anyway, in the 16s, at that time, I think there were 7 Poles. I remember all the names. Why? Because when we were transferred to a combat squadron, which was a combat wing, which was 14s.
Hang on, we'll come to that, because we're still, you're talking about the Poles with you.
Yes.
You're saying there were 7 of you. That's all there were in 16 wing, was it, or just in your squadron? 16?
In our squadron, and that was as far as I remember, that was total.
Even though it's Polish Air Force, is this business?
Of course. Look, Polish Air Force, I can give you some figures from just after the war.
You mentioned before, right. Yeah. So there weren't many Poles in the Polish Air Force relative to Russians.
Third, let's put it this way. Third Division on Ilyushin, there were no Poles at all. There were no Poles in division. There was no Poles at all. In the 3rd Fighter Division, after the war, in Krakow, 9, 10, 11, 9, 10, 11 fighter wings, there were 7 Poles. Because we were transferred to the 9 fighter wing, and we were the only Poles in division.
Now, what about this assessment, and how did they assess you? How did your squadron leader assess your progress? Because it's quite, you know, or were they not bothered?
On shooting, your shooting must be within standards, so many hits on the sleeve. Your ground shooting, ground attack. We never trained on rockets, only guns. Never used rockets in training. Nobody really cared very much. As long as you were flying, you were reasonable, you've done minimum amount, you were passed.